Okay. Baruch Hashem, we're here, and it's January 23rd, 2022, and it's a Sunday morning, and as cold as it is here, and it is cold, I just spoke with New York, and I was told, at least in Brooklyn, it is 16 degrees Fahrenheit. And I see David Goldis in Hollywood, Florida, is laughing at all of us. He thinks he's in Gan Eden. He can walk out in his sweatshirt. It's only one little problem, that the Beis HaMikdash will be built within walking distance of where I'm talking to you. And you are in Hollywood, Florida, with all that it has and doesn't have. V'day l'chakima. I want to dedicate today's shiur in the memory of Rav Simcha Krauss. Rabbi Krauss was a very unique individual. First of all, he was a fine Talmud Chacham. Secondly, he learned in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin when Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein was slightly older than Reb Simcha, and he saw Rabbi Aaron in his youth already. This we're talking Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein as a teenager. He knew that this young man would be an Adam Gadol. And I have to say, when Reb Simcha came in Aliyah, his greatest joy was going to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's Sheyur or Sheyurim in Gris Kollel. So fascinating, his rabbinic career, in his main career, I believe, was in St. Louis, and he really established that city, organized the day school, and then came to Queens, Hillcrest, succeeding Rabbi Kowalski, who was the founding rabbi, if I recall correctly. And he was there for quite a few years, and Hillcrest became a major center of Torah and davening, and it built Hillcrest when all is said and done. Ultimately, the conservative temple became Orthodox. I think it's a shoot-off of the young Israel that brought so many from Jews, Baruch Hashem, to Hillcrest. And not only that, he and his wife Esther, the relationship between them, L'Kavod L'Tiferet, again, in the modern day age, we need good role models. And that was certainly a fabulous role model. And the children they raised, their two daughters, and their son, Harav Binyamin Krauss, who was my own student here in the Kollel, today the dean of Sar Academy. So it's really a family, L'Kavod L'Tiferet. And, you know, it hurts. I just spoke with Reb David Miller, and we both said that the whole world we knew is no longer tangible, basically. And the Rav himself, if you read my work on the Rav, I quote the Rav where the Rav said, youth cannot understand the old age in the sense that we relate to a world that's no longer with us. And of course, when I heard the Rav say that many decades ago, I didn't appreciate it as fully as I have to appreciate it today. I also want to mention that we spoke about Rabbi Orlian, and one of my students listening, Jacob Sasson, who has supplied me with many wonderful documents from archives. Remember, I said to you that Rabbi Orlian, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was not ordained by YU. His ordination was in Israel. And here, my Talmud, Rabbi Sasson, came up with a copy of his ordination from Rav Herzog. It's in the archives of Rabbi Herzog, and here it is, with the name and everything, in Yori Yora. Very fascinating. A small correction, I spoke about Rav Sheinfeld, and I said he was a Kalev HaChatzi. He was more than that. He was a brother-in-law to the Kalev HaRebbe. And that's how they both wound up in Cleveland. And later, Rabbi Sheinfeld, both of them came in Aliyah. The Kalev HaRebbe, of course, was in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Sheinfeld was Rav of one of the Shikunim in Bnei Brak. And as I said, Vic Snow is his family, the Machatanim, with David Newman from Cleveland, who grew up father, a survivor, sent him to the Kaleva Cheda and grew with great derech eretz for the Kaleva and the Hasidic world. Interestingly, I asked the question, when I learned in Lakewood, there were the two Moshe Eismans, and I recall we were told that the elder, Rav Moshe Eisman Sr., who was a Yerapeyasher and the Talmud of Rabbarin from before and then afterwards in America, and I was told it was his nephew. There was about a 30-year difference between them. The nephew of Moshe Eisman, who winds up today in Baltimore, near Israel. And I said, I'm curious what the relationship is. So I was sent, this is a link in relation to the Eisenmans. It's a website called Da'at V'Dibur, and it has an entire article on Rabbi Chil Schlesinger. Rabbi Schlesinger was the founder of Kol Torah Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, was a German, a Yekka. And it writes that when he started teaching in Frankfurt in the yeshiva, he inspired some of the better students to go on to Lithuania. And one of them was Rabbi Moshe Eisman, Rosh Yeshiva Vinland, and he writes he was a cousin of the Baltimore Mashgiach. Well, I the only problem I have in accepting that at face value is that there was a tremendous age difference between them, so there's no doubt that they weren't, no doubt in my mind that they weren't first cousins. It could be it was a first cousin to a second cousin, my second cousin once removed, the first cousin once removed, so something to that degree. Okay, but I appreciate the information. I also want to comment, Jack sent me information or a whole article, and the whole question of where we grow up, later in life we move on, and Jack grew up in Toronto, today he's been in Israel a number of decades already, and you lose your feeling for where you grew up. To a certain degree that's true, but I have to say, to a certain degree, if you had a happy childhood, I don't have to tell you, it's very important to look back and say, oh, these are my roots, and I can just say that Malka and I still feel a connection to the Bronx. It came across recently with the terrible tragedies, as I mentioned, that fire where so many people were killed. That was about five blocks from where I grew up. And Malka was in a state of shock because Thursday they shot a baby. There was a shooting, and one of the stray bullets shot a one-year-old kid, less than a year, sitting in the car seat. In the car, his father had gone into shop. And this is Valentine Avenue and I think 198. That's exactly where Malka's grandparents lived. Malka lived on Valentine Avenue a few blocks away. And right at that point, the store was right across the street from where Rabbi Chodkov's shtibble was. That was one of the shtibbles in the Bronx. And it was in the North Bronx already. He was the only shtibble for many blocks around. And, you know, again, you'll say, well, what's the difference? It's a different world, it's a different Bronx, it's different people. All that is true. But the emotion, these were the streets I walked, these were the streets I grew up on, and there is that attachment, and I think it's a healthy attachment. And the Rav said that the Rebbe Shlomo looks at us not as we are mature people with sins, but like a little innocent child. Habein yakiri li'Ephraim. That's why Rachem Arachamenu Ne'ub Hashem. It's a beautiful thought. And I think that's a healthy disposition. Okay, let's come back here. We have a world to do today. Tomorrow Satmar, I've got through the comments, and you'll see what I'm going to unveil tomorrow in class, but leave that all for tomorrow. And Jack, many of your questions will be answered because you'll see, if not tomorrow, in a week or two, I put in one additional concept which brings home an understanding of people like us, religious Zionists, but how we have to understand Satma, etc. Okay. Now this question I'm dealing with the Mishnah Halacha Chelek Yud Gimel Siman Kuf Ayin Gimel. And here the question is, in Chicago, it's not just in Chicago, they did this in Detroit, they did it in Toronto, they did it in England, and it's a result, I have to be honest with you, it's a terrible problem in the state of Israel. It's a problem which today the Haredi world, at least part of it, is trying to ameliorate it. This is why I've told everyone, you can't force issues. You think you're going to go up and down the streets in Geula and in Matasdorf and Beitar Elite and grab the young men off the streets and throw them into the army. There's an Eretz Yisrael graduate who's a Chavar Knesset. He lives in Beit Shemesh. And he became a wild-eyed Zionist. He, you know, he wears a black hat. Doesn't look like me. Take my word for it. And he was in the Knesset and the Jewish agency. I hold he's a good person. I never met him, but nevertheless, he was in America. He was speaking in Teaneck, and a Talmud of mine said to him, well, how are you going to draft all these Haredim if they don't want to go? He says, well, throw them in jail. So my Talmud says to him, do you have a jail big enough? He said, we'll build a big jail. All right, it's believe me, maybe I thought like that 70 years ago, 60 years ago. But when you see reality, it's a natural, slow process. And as I've said so many times, we who are Talmidim of the Rav and why you people, we have such an obligation to set the pace, and we have to show that you can be a Gon and a Tzaddik and a Chassid and a real Yirei Shemayim. But thank God it's Israel, and we need an economy, we need a culture here, we need an army, we need a police force, and we have to take charge. It's our country. And as I've said so many times, it's irrefutable. Who shouldn't be in the army? Anyone who's Mechalel Shabbos. Anyone who doesn't talk, open Gemara in Salta, I don't have time now, but you know what I told you with Reb Chaim and Reb Shimon Shkup and the Magid. Absolutely, we should kick them out of the army. But we who are tzaddikim, we have to serve. Okay, all I can tell you is the more from people in the army, the better it is, plain and simple. I remember I did the army, I did basic training, and I served in Miluim, and I actually was in Africa all the way to Syria, compliments of the Israeli army. You know, before we gave back Sinai, that's Africa. I was mamish in the Sleed, the Air Force Base, I spoke there. I mean, stories on top of stories, it's not for now. But be it as it may, this is the Haredi world. Now, this problem of not working and marrying off kids and the paying for a son-in-law, this is their mentality. It causes people start running to America and running to England and running to Canada. And I can tell you, I've been in all these places, even Australia. And Sunday, it's like some places you have to hide because every half hour they're knocking on your door and it's another person from Israel with documents and with a sob story and they want money. So ultimately, it reached the point, and I understand it because I experienced it. Not that I'm the Baal Stucker, but I was with people who did give. And I know what it was like. Every half hour, another knock on the door. And it became an entire profession, as I explained to you last week. A driver and a list and who to go to. Elliot, you know what I'm talking about. You know, all right. You know just what I'm talking about. So they came up with the idea of organizing it and checking it out and giving them a license to collect. And all right. Now, this Shaila came up, and as we saw last week, we started the tshuva, that he says, Shalotin al delet mifnei lovin, what we went out of our way, that people should be able to borrow money, and we abolished all drishot and chakirat. We want to help the poor person. Alachat kama v'kama, how do you embarrass a person, poor people, people in need? How do you embarrass them? They have to go before a committee. They have to show documents. You have to take their picture. Now, we Jews, and as I said to you last week, and I think it's it just showed up again in the Jerusalem Post, we Jews shy away from having our pictures taken. What I told you last week with the Newark, Yomo, please sit here. Eat, isn't the hate, but sit here. Watch the screen. What I told you last week about the police, but it's much more than that. If you saw the Post now, there's the New York Times has articles, the Post has had articles. Who revealed Anne Frank, the tragedy with the Otto Frank family, I don't have to tell you, in Holland, and the pictures of the museum. I was in that museum, by the way. It's a very moving museum, obviously, and very well done. And you see pictures on the wall, pictures on the wall. You come to Yad Vashem, pictures, hundreds and hundreds, to give you a feeling of those that were killed. So here you're taking pictures, I don't know, a Jew shies away from pictures. It brings back terrible memories. And here you're going to insist, no, we take your picture and we're going to give you a tudah with the time limit. Are you allowed? Okay, so Rabbi Menashe Klein says, absolutely not. This goes against the heart and feeling of Judaism. Now, we ended off the class last week with the Gemara in Baba Batra. The Gemara in Baba Batra, I have to be honest with you. At first glance, there is no question. That Gemara says you have a right to check. Someone comes and says they're hungry. Imagine the Gemara says we check whether he's hungry. Someone comes and says he doesn't have proper clothes. We check if he's dressed properly, not dressed properly. So you see from the Gemara, we do check. And so Rabbi Menashe Klein raises the issue, and he gives an answer. I don't know whether the answer is gekvetched or not gekvetched. Gives an answer, the Gemara is talking about where he comes to you. When he comes to you, you have a right to check. But to insist that you have to check, absolutely not. Okay, could be it's a good answer. There's certainly a lot of other sources that will support Rabbi Menashe Klein's thesis. That Gemara is very fascinating. I'll tell you why. I alluded to it last week. Sociologists, you deal with economics and sociology, psychology, call it what you wish. What is more important to a person? What can you suffer more? You see, it would make a very interesting roundtable discussion. People who are psychologists, psychiatrists, I have many students. You have people who would rather go hungry than not appear in public with fancy clothes. You follow the public image. There are other people who couldn't care less about fancy clothes, but let me eat. And that's the Gemara. It's very fascinating that the Gemara alludes to this very problem. Human beings are very different. You'll take the Hungarians. If you don't have a chandelier in your house, it's like you're not living. It's not proper. The chandelier, I mean, the jokes they tell, but they swear to me this is a true story, that in Borough Park, a policeman was friendly with this Hungarian family among all the Hungarians, and he was in their house, and he said, you know, I've become very friendly with the Jewish people. I love them. And he says, I know what a mezuzah is. What is the chandelier? What does this indicate? And, you know, he really thought it's a religious figure, that it has some religious overtones. So, you know, a Hungarian, I don't know, he wouldn't walk out of the house dressed not properly. He has to look, Baruch Hashem. You take a Yekke, a Yekke walks out. You take a Litvak. When I learned in Lakewood, there were, for the sake of argument, about 102 students. It's not the, it began with 13, 14, but by when I came to Lakewood in 54, I would say, it already had 102 students. Everyone dressed differently. No one was dressed up. Everyone, different shirt, different pants, different hat. I mean, oh, we davened with a hat, but it doesn't mean a hat, a cap. The only one who wore a black hat was Rav Aaron Kotler, the Rosh Yeshiva. Even the Mashgiach, Rav Nassim Vachon, wouldn't dare wear a black hat. He wore a brown hat, as I recall. It was a different feeling. You take Chassidim. Chassidim, all right. Some of them, you look around, we'll get to this in the Monday class. This guy's wearing a Becker shirt, doesn't fit him properly, but all right, this one's wearing his flung over a Hasidic hat, and it's not the same. Human beings are different. Then you come to food, all right, food, they tell Gedolei Yisrael that they didn't know what they were eating. You understand? It was they say, who do I hear the stories on? One of the Gedolei Yisrael, where he asked his wife, did he eat yet? He didn't even know, had he eaten, had he not eaten? I mean, these, I think it's under Chaim Kanievsky, a story like this. But you see, this is a very delicate question. But the pashtus of the Gemara would indicate you have every right to ask questions. You know, we work hard for our money. We don't just throw it away. On the other hand, Reb Menashe Klein says, yeah, but he came to you. You don't have a right to order him get a tzetel with a card, with a picture, with a stempel. Fascinating. All right, then Reb Menashe Klein goes further, and he says, how do we know you think people are phonies? How do we know a person is a phony? Just because he's collecting stucca and you think he has money, you think he's a phony. Now, I'll give you sources. They're very interesting. This already brings us to the contemporary world. There are people in the Mei Sharim area, you read about the tzaddikim, the hidden tzaddikim, the nishtarim. People went around collecting every shul, every morning. And it turned out they never kept a penny. Everything was given away to charity. There was a person who used to sit, I don't know if he's alive anymore, of American origins. I think he was from Chicago. I know that the Soloveitchik family knew him, the Soloveitchiks from Chicago. And he used to sit there collecting all day. He spoke Hebrew, Yiddish, perfect English, obviously. And I was told that he almost never kept a penny. Afterwards, it would all be distributed among poor families. So Reb Menashe Klein, I don't want to confuse my papers, let's work separately. Reb Menashe Klein called this Mafish, you might think it comes from contemporary society, you'll see why. Quotes the Vayikra Rabba. I'm quoting the Vayikra Rabba, Parsha Kei, Sif Katan Dalet. And the Vayikra Rabba tells a story, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish, Azal LeBatzra, went to the city Batzra, and Chayat Haman Chad Banash, I love that expression, Banash, they still use it today, even in modern Hebrew you'll see Banash, like, yeah, a human being. And his name was Abba Yudin Ramay, and he was called Abba Yudin the faker. Chas v'shalom lo havi Ramay, ela the Have Ramay b'mitzvata. He was a faker when it came to mitzvah. I watched the story, and the Midrash continues. Whenever they made an appeal for charity, everyone gave, and he refused. When the appeal was over, after he said he's not giving, when the appeal was over, he would add up how much was pledged, and he would match the sum that was pledged. Now, doesn't this sound familiar? Don't you know they're professional fundraisers, and they run this gimmick? Every lira, I'm going back to 69, 70, every shekel, every dollar you will give will be matched. And this becomes a method of fundraising. It's now in a at the end of the year, in December, I must have seen four different funds like that. And what's the idea? You get a wealthy guy. Anyone who's named Hank Bauer, Natan has to be wealthy. So you come to Natan, you say to him like this, look, Natan, you're willing to give $1 million to this cause. But we're going to do it differently. We're going to say every dollar given you will match, so that $1 million will come in, maybe. Then we'll announce you're giving $1 million. You follow me? But it's used as bait. Here it is in the Medrash. Here you have an actual source from the Medrash Rabbah. So, you see, when it comes to charity, how do you know a person is a Ramai? You have people, I don't advocate this type of lifestyle, but you have people who go around collecting and they give it all away. Their whole purpose is to do the tzedakah. They feel they're good collectors, they have good contacts. There's one guy in comes to my shul, we're 530 million. So basically we don't get too many people coming around that early. But there's one guy who comes regularly. I don't know who the guy's collecting for. The guy appears very intelligent. He speaks a little English. He walks in with a pile of newspapers, some of the freebies, Yisrael Hayom. He gives them out. He sits there and says to Hillim. He waits to see when we have a minion. Then he leaves to go on to the, there's a 6 o'clock minion a few blocks away. He waits to see that we have a minion. Today we have no problem with a minion, but during the height of Corona, there was a bit of a problem. And I remember I was lower lane, Sam was sick, he died afterwards. They put 3 months in the hospital, couldn't save him. And he infected me, and there was a problem then. I got a message from a guy who was saying, Kaddish, when are you going to come to shul already? I was half dead, and he's giving me musa that I'm not going to shul. But all right, a good guy. A good guy? He's still at the 530 minion even after the Kaddish ended, so he's a good guy. So this guy, I don't know. Is he collecting for himself, or is he collecting because he's going to distribute it? So right away, Reb Menashe Klein says, how do we have a right to start checking? People are collecting, give. Who knows what they're doing with the money? And that story from the Vayikra Rabbah, even though everyone called him Ramai, but the people knew when you give him, it went to a good cause. Then he quotes the Sefer Hasidim. You'll see the source. And the Sefer Chassidim, by the way, you should know that we'll get to it later on in this tshuva. Tremendous machloket between Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Menashe Klein. They came up with a manuscript. Do you remember this in the late 70s, as I recall? Came up with a manuscript of the Sefer Chassidim, and there were some strange concepts in, about 3-4 different concepts that were not within the realm of what we would consider Mesorah. And Reb Moshe Paskin that the Sefer can't be sold, it's apikorsus, it's Talmidim, and Reb Menashe Klein was Melamed Zchut, the Sefer Chassidim, etc. So, fascinating. But this is the Sefer Chassidim before the revised edition, which was published in Switzerland. And we'll talk about it, it's not for now, because it's interesting. Do we have the right to say when we find a manuscript that a Talmud She'enu Hagun is the one who threw it in? And he calls the Sefer Chassidim that there was one individual, Shehaya Talmud Chacham, V'lo Haya Tzarich L'Briyad, and Baruch Hashem, he was financially stable. He went to Machon Lev like Shlomo, and he graduated and made a good living. You know, some of the Machon Lev graduates, I don't know if you know it, are not just millionaires, they're on the way to being billionaires today. Soda Stream is one small example that began right across the hill here. So it turned out that they found out that this man, Lo Hayanenesh Shava Pruta, ki haya notein laniyim tzadikim. And he says, look into the Sefer Hasidim. And you see, here too, he's touching upon a psychological issue. You're a tzaddik. You know how hard it is to go and ask people to give money. You know, you're begging, and you're and here at tzaddik, at Talmud Chacham, you're a shemayim, and here this individual didn't mind. He could handle it. He had the personality, and it turned out that he never kept a penny. So he was called a Ramai. It's another example. Tzvayikra Rabba, this is Sefer Chassidim. Right. Then Reb Menashe Klein opens the world to the Gemara in Ketuvah. Right. This is a very famous Gemara. And this Gemara shows you how sensitive you have to be. Gemara in Ketuvah, Samach Zayin Amid Bet. Tana Rabbanon, Dai Machsar, Machsaro, Atametzveh Alav Lafanaso, you are commanded to sustain him and keep him on the same level he is accustomed to. Wow, what does that mean? And the Gemara tells the story that if a person rode on a horse, when I grew up 2,000 years ago, I rode on a donkey. Mark was wealthy. He rode on a horse. Not just that. And his servant, Avdol Laritz Lefanav, there's a famous Gemara, and his servant ran in front of him. You understand? This shows class. Those of you familiar, there was bloodshed between two Hasidic courts, Sanz and Ruzhin. You understand? The Hungarians, the Rebbeim, Sanz afterwards, Sapa, it's ongoing machloiket with Ruzhin. Ruzhin, Malchut, Natan, I lectured on this about 30 years ago. Did you hear those lectures or not? Malchut, why Malchut? I can explain it, but it's not for now. Go back 30 years. It wasn't in this room. The Kollel was in the other part. They rebuilt it where the Abraham program is, and you'll pick up my lectures. But Malchut, what, the Ruzhin Rebbe, when any other Rebbe went out, and they put him into a carriage, so there was one horse, two horses. The Ruzhin Rebbe, eight horses, six horses. Hasidim dressed like soldiers. The Ruzhin Rebbe is coming. This is Chavaka Malchut. So here you have, now when a person gets used to living like this, you see, it becomes part of his makeup. Imagine you were once, I don't have to tell you how much it's been written, how many movies, how many novels have been written, how many Makarot we can have. A person was used to luxury, and now nothing. Er liegt in dread. You don't have to translate that. Er liegt in dread. He's on the ground. And you feel bad. You remember what you had. All right. Psychologically, some people are big enough to overcome it. I can tell you with the Holocaust survivors, so much research has been done. Do you recall? Do you forget? Do you block it out? Do you try to recreate? Do you try to equal? This is a human being. We're all different, okay? Baruch Hashem, I'm not a Ruzhin Rebbe, that much I can tell you. But I told you more than once, I got my years knocked off my first shtetl. I was 23 years of age, 23, right? I was the greatest gift that happened to me, because from that point on, Baruch Hashem, I became a mensch. So here you have a guy who's used to riding on a horse and having an eved run before him. You want to give this man charity? You have to keep him at that level. You have to give him a horse, and you have to have someone run in front of him. And the Gemara says, this is the most famous part of the Gemara, on one occasion, they could not find a servant to run in front of him, and Hillel HaZaken ran in front of him. Wow. What a powerful Gemara. They tell another story that there is this Hahudiyata Lakame de Rav Nechemya. There was a certain pauper who came to Rav Nechemya to be fed. Rav Nechemya asked him, "What do you eat? What are you accustomed to?" I'm saying it, but I just say I hit the word that the Schottenstein translation Artscroll. On what are you accustomed to dine? Underline the word accustomed. And he answers, Basa Shamein V'yayin Yashan, fat meat and aged wine. Aged wine is supposed to be very good. You're not supposed to drink wine right away, and it has to age and get sweet and the taste and the grapes. And Reb Nechemya said to him, look, I can't feed you what you're accustomed to, but I eat adashim, lentils. This is a good Israeli, right? This is the Middle East diet, lentils. We live longer, we're healthier. No, it's not the... So he said, would you join me? And the poor guy joined him. He was hungry, and he ate lentils, and he died. And Reb Nechemya said, woe unto me, I killed him. Another geser is, woe unto this pauper, he killed himself. Now, what do you have here? It's very fascinating. First of all, the basic pshat is that Rav Nechemya was guilty. A man is used to eating wine and meat, and you give him lentils? His stomach can't handle it. So that would mean that we have every obligation when you feed a poor man, don't look at what you're accustomed to eating, look what he's accustomed to eating, and feed him accordingly. And if Hillel HaZaken could run before his horse, then Mark, you certainly can run before the horse and honor this poor man. That's the basic pshat. But you see, there's another pshat here in the Meiri, the Rishonim, you'll see that this poor man, he's guilty. How do you develop a level of eating, a level of such luxury that you're going to ruin other people, force them to feed you good meat, fresh meat, wine? You're also guilty. Why do we have this high standard of living? I can tell you how we came in Aliyah. It was a different world then. Yeah. It's hard for you to conceive what it was like 53 years ago. But, the food here was very primitive, and you had Rice Krispies, Pitzputzei Oras that were put in a bag. That was the only thing you had. Whoever heard of dry cereal? One time my wife was in Machne Yehuda buying Pitzputzei Oras, and a Moroccan lady says to her, what do you do with it? How do you cook it? You understand? Everything was very primitive. And the taxes, what went on here. And it was Baruch Hashem. It was a different world. We survived. But I remember I had a friend, Jay Shapiro. He's very famous. He writes for Arutz Sheva. Jay and I knew each other. We bonded together when I was in Philadelphia, and we came in Aliyah at the same time. And Jay wrote a column once, what do we want? We're used to eating three meals a day. He said, all right, with the Yemen, we'll get along on two, but at least leave us enough money to have two meals. He came up with an expression, an aphorism: the bank lends you your salary. You follow? Your salary goes to the bank, and the bank lends you on interest your salary. But you see, there's something to be said here. You have to learn how to eat more simplistically. And in retrospect, I have to tell you, the longer I'm in Israel, the more my palate is more Israeli, salads and hummus and tchina. And then I found out tchina is one of the healthiest foods in the world. You understand? They talk about the Mediterranean diet with the lentils and the fish and the tchina and the hummus. It turns out this is the healthiest food that one can eat. The Japanese claim to have healthy diets. They say that the Middle East diet matches anything Japan has to offer. But this is a very delicate Gemara. Who's at fault? Is it Nehemiah at fault? Or is the poor man at fault? But the basic shot is that Nehemiah felt very bad. The man died. He didn't have the good wine and the good meat to give him. Then there's a beautiful story. The Gemara continues that Rava's sister came. A certain pauper came before Rava, and Rava asked him, "What are you accustomed to dining?" Same story, and he says, "But for a golden futuma v'yayin yashan, fattened poultry." And old wine. And number one, you see from this commercial something very interesting. Which was the bigger treat, meat or chicken? From this Gemara, you see that chicken was a bigger treat than meat. I want to tell you, if you heard my lectures on the history of Torah in the United States going back maybe 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when we dealt with Rabbi Jacob Joseph, you saw in the immigrant community, chicken was considered a greater treat than meat. That's why they taxed the chicken. Remember, 1 cent a chicken for the plumber. This led to Rav Yaakov Yosef's undoing. 1 cent a plumber that it was kosher and slaughtered properly. And we asked, why not the meat? And you see, they explained the meat was for poor people. But the chicken was for rich people. In the state of Israel, just the opposite. Chicken, turkey, all over the place. Meat, steak, the meat they grow up in the Golden Heights. I heard people talking Shabbos. I was at my children. And we were 4 generations, but we went to shul. And you can't walk the streets, Baruch Hashem. Palmach area, walking home. I couldn't go Dalet Amud without meeting another person, another Baruch Hashem. Malka said, wow, you feel Shabbat. What a change in a neighborhood. This neighborhood, that area, 53 years ago, oh my, where was Shabbat? Today, what a change. But I met people. They're talking, they had steak. Oh my gosh, Jackie Mason would do a whole play out of it. Oh, Atam Gan Nathan, Golden Heights, better than the meat they get from Australia. I don't know, in Australia also, it's supposed to be very special meat, Nashkocher and Deshech, and they're boasting. So this person says, what do I eat? This poor person collecting charity, asking for a meal. So Rava says to him, how do you eat on that level? Aren't you ashamed, lo chayshinen leduchakad tzibura? Because you eat on that level, you're making the Jews cough up more money. Let me see the translation. Duchakad tzibura, imposing hardship upon the community who would be paying for your expensive tastes. So the pauper wasn't an Amoritz. He says, the people are paying for it. The Ribbono Shel Olam is paying for it. Eine kol alecha yisaberu v'atan notein lechem. And he could have quoted the Mother Gemara's, but Rosh Hashanah, everything is decreed, etc., except what you spend on Shabbos and Yom Tov. This pauper told him off, and Rava is shaking. Where is he going to come up with this beautiful chicken and the beautiful wine? And at that moment, the Gemara says, Rava's sister, who had not seen him for 13 18 years appeared. Adahachi ataya chatei derava delochanzia lei telesrei shenei. And she brings him a gift, a fattened hen and aged wine. And Rava says, wow. He turns to the poor person and says, I apologize for criticizing you. Kum vecho, get up and eat. Wow. So you see from there, proof after proof. Don't make the pauper feel bad. Don't tell him off. Don't be indignant towards him. Give generously. Don't ask questions. Don't check him out. And then, there's an unbelievable story. I think this is the most famous one. I remember hearing it as a kid. Ma'ukva had a poor man in his neighborhood. They translate a pauper. And every day, when Ma'ukva walked by the house, Shmuel, how are you? Wow. I got to make you a little skinnier and a little younger. And they give you back a little hair, which I can't give from myself, and turn it black. And it's Dr. Shmuel Preschel from the city that makes a mistake. They think they're B'nai Brak in Israel. It's Lakewood in New Jersey. Am I right or wrong?
Right.
Baruch Hashem. And his father-in-law was Reb Moshe's personal physician. Correct? Okay, Baruch Hashem. And his sister was my wonderful student in Mechala. She married an Austrian citizen, Herzog. And your brother is the one who lives here in Baruch Hashem, has been learning all his life. Did he ever go to college?
No.
It must have cost your parents a lot of Akmas Nefesh, a son who never went to college. Father, Talmud Chacham, brilliant with knowledge. Back here, you're in the middle of a Sunday class, and we're in the middle of the whole question of whether you wise guys in Lakewood get bothered with so many mishulachim from the state of Israel that you want to insist they get credit and cards and certified, otherwise they can't collect. That's what we're in the middle of. Now, okay, let's come back here. So, by the way, we have a big crowd listening, but they're over here, not over there. And you actually have from your area, from New York and Florida, people are up all night. This is over almost 2 years already that they don't sleep, but they hear the shiur Sunday, Monday, and the Rebbe can't convince them otherwise, but they can hear it in YU Torah. But they say, Rebbe, ein adam mishmi l'riya, and I can't argue with them. Okay, let's come back here. So, but Ma'ukba, whenever he walked by, we're in the Gemara in Ketubah, Sadi Samach Zayin Amid Bet. And he would throw 40 shekel at the guy's door, and day after day after day. One day, he was late in the Beis Medrash, the Talmidim were bothering him, so his wife came and told him, we got to go, we got to give charity. And she accompanied him. And the pauper wanted to see, it's a little later, he hears they're coming, someone coming, wants to see who gives me this charity. And when Mam Ukva approached, he didn't want them to see him, so they ran away, and they saw a stove nearby that they thought was empty. They jumped into the stove to hide from the pauper. The coals were still burning. And Ma'ukba's wife sat on top of it. Nothing singed her. She felt fine. and her husband, his legs are burning. She signaled him, put your legs on top of mine. And when they walked out of the stove, he was very depressed. Imagine, my wife has more skliyot than me. What's the matter with me? And she turned to him and said, and this is classic, she said, look, you just give charity to poor people. But I'm always in the house. And when the poor person comes, I give more than charity. I give them food, bread, cake, a meal. That's why I have more schut than you. Can anyone tie this story in with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? Can anyone tie it in with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? I'll tie it in. Rav Aaron, who I know from 51 on, then he lived, when he came in Aliyah, he lived around the corner for us for a few years. And so people knock on your door. What do you do? You're in the midst, look, are you? I'm always in the midst of something. All right? You're learning. You're writing. You're reading the latest gossip on screen. Don't have to tell you I'm anywhere. Yeshiva World News, Buses Nice, Chadah Chadarim, Kikah Shabbat. There's no end to what goes on. Olamam Shel Charedim. If I would waste my time in all these, I wouldn't learn a thing in Gemara. I limit myself, Yomonos. I very limit to what I look at in the morning. The New York Yankees and Yeshiva World News. That satisfies me. At night, I look at the Post, because I grew up in the Post, but it's such schmutz. You got to censor out, try to filter out if there's a little news. But they're right, as I told you an hour ago, at times you do see news about where you grew up, the streets you walked on. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, so people come in, so you give them something and you close the door. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein would invite them into his house and talk with them. Not just give them. Chat with them. The gadol, a gadol, a tzaddik, you sowed on them. Make them feel you're not looking down upon them. This is exactly this Gemara. The lady has much more skliyot than the man. She sits them down. She feeds them. She talks with them. And there are endless stories of Gedolei Yisrael, American Gedolim I don't have to go further. Who here is from Queens? You're from Woodmere? Have you ever been in Kew Gardens Hills? Baruch Hashem. Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva, a block away from Landers. What a beautiful building. Yomo, you know how they built that building? There was a poor man who constantly came around the yeshiva, day after day. The students tolerated him, looked at him, looked askance. Reb Henoch Leibovitz always spoke to him. Rosh Hashanah, the yeshiva would send him a New Year's greeting, a card. Henoch would write a few words of bracha. He's not married, no children, no wife, lived all by himself. When he died, the yeshiva was contacted by a lawyer. You've just gotten a bequest, I think it was $6 million, $7 million. If I'm overstating it or understating it, I'm not sure. Who was it from? This man. With a whole will, he said, no one paid attention to me, no one cared about me. I was taken for granted as if I didn't exist. But Rav Henoch Leibovitz And he mentioned the Rosh Hashanah cards. See? That's Gottlieb. That's Gottlieb. And you know, you can never tell. There are people who don't know how to spend money. There are people. I may be slightly one of them, believe me, but I'm very happy I'm one of them. People don't know how to spend money. They have. Ann Schreiber knew. Why you? You know the story with Stern College. It's a classic story. A lawyer calls Rabbi Lamb's office. Rabbi Lamb had a secretary very devoted to him. She was fabulous. An older lady, but I never saw such devotion. She comes, knocks on, and says to Rabbi Lamb, you're getting a call from a lawyer, says he's very important. He says, I don't have time, please. He says, you handle it. The lawyer says, look, tell Rabbi Lamb he will not regret talking to me. Finally, she puts the call through, and she says, Rabbi Lamb, a lady has died on the Upper West Side. She never married. Ann Schreiber. She left $23 million to Stern College for science, women who want to go into science. And Rabbi Lamb meets with, they couldn't believe it. They called all the rabbis on the West Side. Do you know Ann Schreiber? No, no one knew her. No one knew her. No shul had her name. Turns out, she was a spinster, never married, worked as a secretary, retired in 46 and was given severance pay. And she asked advice, what to do with the money. She said, invest it in Coca-Cola stock. She said, I don't need the money. I have an apartment. I have no children. She invested it in a Coca-Cola stock. The rest is history. At that time, Madoff was still running high, and no one knew what the inside story was. Her nieces and nephews came out of the woodworks. I know other cases like that right here in Israel. Oh, it's our aunt. We were there. It turned out they never called. They never spoke. By the time the judge awarded it all to Yeshiva University, the $23 million had turned into $32 million. And until today, girls at Stern College benefit from the Ann Schreiber Trust. Now, you see, you never know a person, you think he's a pauper. Talk with him. Be nice to him. You never know what a human being is. You never know what's underneath the surface. You never know when a good word can have influence that lives on for eternity. And this is the Gemara. Very, very powerful. The woman, she has more schut. She enables the pauper, the poor person, to have human dignity. And that was for Baruch Lichtenstein. It was very special in that respect. Mark, I am far from being able to emulate Rabbi. I apologize. I'm far. Time to me is precious. Don't bother me. People call me, Rebbe, are you busy? I say, if I wouldn't be busy, I wouldn't be Aaron Rakefet. What do you want out of me? Should sit around and daydream? But there's another part to the Gemara. It continues on Samechet Omer Aleph. What's the Gemara? Rabbi Hanina had a certain pauper, again I'm using the Art Scroll translation, he would send him 4 zuz every Erev Shabbos to have money to make Shabbat. And one time he sent the money with his wife. He was busy. His wife comes back and tells him, What are you sending that guy money for? He's a swindler. What do you mean he's a swindler? He says, she says, before I entered the house, I heard the pauper talking with his wife. And his wife was asking him, how do you want to dine on Shabbos? Upon silver tablecloths or golden tablecloths? Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Yomo, do you eat on a silver tablecloth? A golden? Rabbeinu Shel Olam, look how wealthy that. Even in Woodmere, you don't eat on a silver tablecloth. Right or wrong, let alone gold. Wow. So his wife was very upset. And Rabbi Hanina said, quoting Rebbe Lazza, now I understand what Rebbe Lazza said. Bo v'nachzik tova l'ramayim. Let us go and thank the fact that there are scoundrels, there are fakers in the world. And what does it mean? And the Rishonim already explained. When a poor person comes to you, you're obligated to give, to sustain him. What did we talk about? The horse to ride on, this Hillel HaZaken running in front of him, Drushin, Malchut. And because they're, looking to Rashi, because they're swindlers, so he only gave him 100 shekel, 50 shekel. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to be angry with us, because we'll say, look, we gave something. Well, Chayshish, maybe he's a faker, maybe he's a scoundrel. Maybe he eats on a gold tablecloth. There's a limit what we can give him, what we're obligated to give him. And the Gemara says, because of this, we have to be thankful that there are scoundrels around. Because of the scoundrels, we can be melamed schutn ourselves why we didn't give all that we have to give. Now I have to tell you, this Gemara plays a big role halacha l'maisa. Because you'll see, we'll come to it, the difference between a yachid giving and a tzibor giving, and this Gemara plays a big role halacha l'maisa. But Rav Menashe Klein utilizes the Gemara plain and simple. We have no right to embarrass someone. We have no right to insist that they get all these documents. We have to treat them with dignity, and we can't embarrass them. And even though there are fakers around, we have no right to stop giving because of that fact. The fakers save us because we never give enough. And he quotes this Gemara, and he quotes other stories in the Gemara where he saw for sure there were fakers. And nevertheless, he says, Chazal did not insist we stop giving charity. Chazal did not insist that we check them out, that we give them certificates. And here's a line, very fascinating. He's talking about Chazal. Ki gam heim yadu lichtov. And he says they also knew how to write. What are we talking about? This is an analphabetic society? We're talking about a Jewish society. We're talking about a society where there already were schools, Ben Gamla, Zachul Tov, but we already had schools, we already had education. We were way ahead of the world. And they could have required certificates. They could have said, check it out. They could have said, bring letters. But he says they did not. Now he says just the opposite. He sees, this is Reb Menashe Klein. His mind works. He enjoys being the opposite thought. He says just the opposite. If someone comes and requests, give me a certificate, that's suspicious. Check him out. Don't just give him the certificate because he requested. Check it out, because that's like a reyata. It's a bad omen that he's asking for a certificate. And there you have to be medayek. But someone who goes on his own, please, let him go. Don't interfere. Avoligzal and Hashim Kshayrim Shayavol Lavakesh Tudot Vilidrosh Vilachachach Arecham Bishvil HaRamaim Chasvil Chalila Lavazot Liknos Lavayesh Etani Hayashah Vahatzadik Biglal HaRamaim. And here again he adds the famous words that we Torah Jews have to struggle with in the year 2023. Me'olam lo shamanu kazab. In other words, Shlomo, you're going to change something? Tradition. You saw Fiddler on the Roof? Don't forget that song, Tradition. We never heard of this. Chazal, they knew how to write. They could have done it. It's logical. No. We never saw this, and we have no right to institute something which we never heard about, we have no tradition about, and with fear that people are Ramayim, so what? You see from the Medrash Rabbi quoted, you see from the Gemara, thank God for the Ramayim. If there wouldn't be Ramayim, we would be Chayav on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for being over on stucca, not giving poteich et yodecha maspil l'chol chai ratzon. We're not giving what we should give. All right, here he says something else which is interesting, and this is in all of halacha. Why are we suspect that these poor people are fakers? Tell me. Dr. Preschel walks into class and he wants to show what America has that Israel doesn't have, and he has a good hot dog, sandwich, sauerkraut, mustard, the works. And he's giving out. Tell me, Elliot, do you ask if it's kosher or not? It's a cheskat kashrut. Every Jew has a cheskat kashrut, right or wrong. Right or wrong? You eat in someone's house? You ask questions? Cheskat kashrut, the lady runs the kitchen. Ah, he says, every Jew has a cheskat kashrut. Why? He says, and he brings down from the Torah, gam bizman hazeh samchinen al cheskat kashrut. And why do you start questioning? Why do we think he's a phony? And then he says, what do these people come with? They come with letters from Rabbanim. And you've all seen this with your own eyes. Letters from Rabbanim in Israel. Sometimes the letters are crumpled. Sometimes they have them in plastic. Sometimes they pay to have it plasticized in a firm plastic. I have a letter from the most important letter I ever got from the Rav. I have in firm plastic. It can't be bent. The tshuva I got from Reb Moshe Feinstein, I have it in plastic. It can't be bent. So he says, we're coming from letters from Gedolei Adar. No, someone will say, Rebbe, maybe the letters are forged. He says, that much to worry about, that maybe the letters are forged. Lo tzarich. That far. Vaday lo tzarich. and he says, Milta de Avida de Gului lo Mishakre Inish. Something there, forgery, people, something would be revealed, you're not going to lie. It's a basic principle in halacha. No, Natan, does this apply today? Absolutely not. Today we're living in a world, fake news. That's a new Hebrew word, fake news. You know what goes on the internet, and letters of Gedolei Yisrael, they just dropped Shachta, something just turned up, and they showed a letter. If it turned out, he never wrote the letter, never saw them, never was requested in Israel, Maisim B'chol Yom, that letters pop up. What we have today in the world of forgery, I mean, you got to remember, Yomo can take a picture of this classroom and then publish it, and sitting in the middle of the class is Rev Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, Rev Moshe Feinstein, sitting in the middle of the class. And Yomo will claim this is the class and fake news, and it's picked up, and then you'll see on one of the websites, HaRav Rakefet is capable of magic, of kishav, of greatness, of Ruach HaKodesh. In his classroom, there's Rav Soloveitchik, there's Rav Moshe Feinstein sitting, right or wrong. Someone already put it, remember you, the pictures on the sukkah wall, I just was laughing, said they put, some of it was a joke on the internet where they showed my picture and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's picture next to Rav Kanievsky, etc. But in a real sukkah, then in where was it?
In
Hanov. My picture was on the wall there. Rebani Shah, of course my picture's on the wall, of course in my classroom. I produced the Rav and Rav Moshe, and I have to tell you, this chazaka would not apply today. In other words, the world is so full of false news and false documents. I don't have to tell you what went on just now with Walda and the lady never who committed suicide, because in the Haredi press they were writing Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And you see, then again, everyone, what's the truth? You don't know what the truth is? And this is, I would say, in this case, that concept of Rav Menashe Klein may have been valid 50 years ago when he wrote it. It's not valid today. But all right, he says they come and they have to look into it. Okay, now he raises another question. And this question we're going to next week. Next week's shiur is Mark an atom bomb. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein is very calm, but occasionally he flies off the handle. And one time he flew off the handle, I was told by his family that it's the only few lines that Rav Moshe ever wrote that he regretted. You know what I'm talking about? No one knows what I'm talking about. The tshuva about the American flag and the Israeli flag in the Young Israel Shul, if you're allowed to have the two flags, and he writes about the Israeli flags, that the Rishoyim, the bad people in Israel, came up with this flag, the Zionist flag. That's the line that Rav Moshe regrets he wrote. Fine. Nothing else that he wrote did he ever regret. And you'll see next week, it's an explosion, and that explosion started long before Rav Moshe and continues till this very second. Take my word for it. And yours truly is a Kanoi. I'm more towards Rav Moshe than the other side, but we'll get there. But how does it begin? What are we talking about now? We're talking about the whole question of individuals. Woodmere on Sunday, beautiful community, big kehila, endless houses, some very wealthy people. And we want to collect money, we want to go from door to door. Fine. That's what this tshuva was about. Give them a certificate. Tell me. Maybe we should have another ideal. set up a federation, and in every community there's a federation, basically Jewish federation, whatever you want to call it, Jewish community council, Jewish federation, a young men's Hebrew association, etc., etc., whatever you want to call it. We all donate to the federation. We give them, people together, $20 million a year, and we tell the federation, you distribute the money. All people will be told, letters will be sent to Israel, all mishulachim, don't go to individual homes, go to the federation, and the federation will take care of you. And, you know, we have someone running the federation who's reliable, who's intelligent, and you can figure out more or less within a few years how many mishulachim come, how many you can expect, what's the crowd in the summer, what's the crowd in the winter. Figure out in the course of the year we get 3,000 mishulachim, divide up the $20 million by 3,000 mishulachim. Maybe there are institutions that also collect. Maybe you want to give an institution more. All right. And when people come, they're not going to bother us. They're not going to knock on our door. They're not going to disturb us. They go to the federation, and the federation will take care of them. And this is the next idea. And is it a good idea? So Reb Menashe Klein says, there's one tremendous problem with the Federation. We alluded to it before. In theory, it's wonderful. Federation, money, available, not embarrassing anyone, but there's no personal contact. Come back to the story of the Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva. Imagine where they would be today if the individual did not knock on their door. The charity, the good deed, was not the money. It was the conversation, making the person feel he has a friend, making the person feel someone cares about him. Imagine how that poor person goes out of the house, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, this is when he lived afterwards on your Day Hasira. Those of you remember, Rabbi Aaron moved there in the mid-70s, late-70s, they bought Yerdei HaSirah. Later, in older age, they had to move already to be near the yeshiva out to the Gush. This is part of the aging processes. I know full well, and I see with all my friends, everyone is my brother, we're all living near our children. There are reasons why. So, what do you do with the Federation? This entire element of the friendship, the psychological support, the moral acknowledgement, all this is lost. And this is why Reb Menashe Klein says no federation can take the place of the individual. And he quotes the Gemara we quoted before, Eshet ma'upa shelosh shalach ba'or hatana lefisha haniyata krova shenotenet la'ani lechol velo kein habal noten lo pruta. And he says, this is the big difference, that his wife engage them socially as a human being. And her husband, Malpa, just threw the money at them and walked away. Federation, no heart, no bones. It's a pure economic contact. It takes 2 minutes. The human being, life, vigor, vim, succor, moral, ethical, psychological support. What a difference. And that's Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. And that's the example. And I would see that the Mishnah Lachot would be in total agreement with Rabbi Aaron. And there are many stories about this, about Gedolei Yisrael, that simple people would come in to talk with them, and they would discuss plain, simple matters. And the Gedolei Yisrael, they would ask them afterwards, "Aren't you bored? Wasn't it beneath your dignity?" And the answer would be, "No, this is the mitzvah of tzedakah. It's not just money. It's moral, ethical support. What are you going to talk about if not the matters, the simple matters that this person is concerned with?" And finally, we'll show you a source next week that is unbelievable, but finally, Rav Menashe Klein says, these were the Anshei Sdom u'Gomorra. There they had chukim, give all the money in the world you want to poor people, but you can never give them food. That you're not allowed. Remember the girl, the punishment? Food, no. Money, yes. And this is Sdom u'Gomorra. Money, the easiest thing to give away. Moral, ethical support, 1,000 times more difficult. It's a very powerful tshuva. I'll tell you the truth. This tshuva should be analyzed in, it could be a starting point for a postgraduate course in sociology. Social workers, care workers, there's so much bus of the yayin here that you can analyze. And this is Rav Menashe Klein. I never met him. I did watch him on TV, on YouTube, and I just was captured by the man's personality. And of course it has to do with his life story. When you go through the Holocaust and you go through the death camps, you're a different person. He was an Adam Gadol, and the greatest proof is that Elie Wiesel was his chavruta, his friend, and all his life, if you asked Elie Wiesel, when he had a shiloh, when he had a real question, who did he turn to? To Rav Menashe Klein. And even when he won the Nobel Peace Prize, what did he do? I think it was half the money he got, he gave to his friend and cohort, and confidant, and to build a branch of the Ungar Beis Medrash, the Ungar Beis Medrash, from Borough Park in Ramat. And the shul is dedicated in memory of Elie Wiesel's parents. I was in the shul. I saw the dedication. Today, Rav Menashe Klein has one son who succeeded him in Borough Park, and one son who's right here in Ramat. I think it's Ramat Beit, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. So let me reiterate before I open it up to the world. I apologize for not looking at all the wonderful people listening, but I have a crowd in front of me. It's not like last week. Last week we had a lot of excitement here. Rav Heschel Schachter and a part of the YU tour group, and then the next day we had the Elchanan Adler and part of the group, but we're doing okay today too. To reiterate, what did we do today? Okay, first of all, we thank Ribbono Shel Olam. We're here in Israel where it's only about 38 degrees compared to New York where it's 16 degrees Fahrenheit today. I spoke with New York a few minutes before the class, so I'm up to date on the weather there. Baruch Hashem, we're here. Baruch Hashem, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, I feel fine. Thank you for all your concern. Last week I had a cold. Maybe I had COVID. Anything is possible. I had it once. I had it. Who knows what's going on? Period. And what did we do tonight? So we continued Rav Menashe Klein, the whole question of giving insisting they have a tudah. Are we allowed to do it? Look what happened in Chicago. Look what happened elsewhere. Are we allowed? Okay, we have a lot more to do. As I said, next week we'll continue this. Rabbi Menashe Klein's psak. We'll deal with the Federation. You'll see what he paskins there. You'll see what. Then we'll deal with Rabbi Moshe. Rabbi Moshe deals with Federation. He and Rabbi Menashe Klein paskin the same way. Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg is quoted too. The Torah Rosh Yeshiva also paskins the same way. And then Rabbi Moshe throws the atomic bomb. And all that next week bears Rat Hashem. Tomorrow I wouldn't miss the class for all the rice in China and all the falafel in Israel. I'm showing you a tshuva, one of my, Rav Moshe Elbaum, my Talmud in Kew Gardens Hills, linked it to me, and you'll see why last week I didn't want to talk about it, and this week I did a little bit more research, and I'm walking on air, and I wish Mu'a Preshel will hear that tshuva tomorrow, and Rav Ehrenberg, and what happened afterwards. And then we're riding high. We're still dealing with what the Satmar Rav is establishing in America. And then we're going to deal with the reaction to the Satmar Rav among the other from Jews in America, including Hasidim and survivors, etc. We have a lot more to do. Give me a whole year, and I hope we'll get there. We're going to deal with the Satmar Rav. The Shita is thinking what and understand Satmar today. And finally, why Rakefet is not a Satma Chassid. Are there any questions from the wonderful students sitting in front of me? Okay. Elliot, I just sent an email, a student who lost his father and his father of a rabbinic family from the 60s. I sent an email of condolence because he introduced me to his uncle, Reb Simcha Elberg, and it was very meaningful for me. And so the student, how do you remember me, from... So I told him, I'm zeichet to have students who were my students 50 years ago, plus sitting in front of me, not just remembering. So Baruch Hashem. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vedanya. Yomo, open it up to the world immediately. There's the David, are you in... David Vogel, are you in England? Are you here? Well, you can't talk yet. They're going to open it. Okay. Open it. It's
I'm
open.
In England.
You're in England. Oh, it's good to see. And what time is it in England?
It's 8:30.
But one second. So how are you not in line on Monday if you're in England? You can't go to the Kollel.
Yeah, because they had a case, had a positive case. So
he does it on Zoom too. So you never have to come to Israel again. You get the best of Israel. He was my student even before you, I think. And you get the best of Israel sitting in London. All right, so I'm in Zion Gezin. Send my regards to the Grzynski's Bakery. Okay? Okay, you got it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Yeah, yes.
Rabbi, I just wanted to tell you what you said about Rabbi Krauss. He was ahead of him in NYU for a few classes. So we had a class that was called... contemporary issues, something like that. So we were learning about Zionism. So he was the president of the religious Zionists of America. He had us learn Vayoa Moshe and Allah Gulu of Allah Tamura. Because he said, if you're going to know, you have to know what...
If you look up the encyclopedia, the Wikipedia article on me, I think they quote me. Rakefet says... If you don't know the Allah Gula Allah Tamura and Vayol Moshe by heart, you can't be a real Zionist. And I still stand on that. If you don't know it backwards and forwards, you can't be a real... But we'll get there. We just have to relax.
I remember Rabbi Rachman had his he was trying to annul marriages. So they asked him to join, to be like one of the people on the thing. So he said, I don't feel comfortable. He said, let's spend the next one. As part of the class, we spent, a month or more going through all the sources of Kedushin and everything. At the end, he said, what do you think, boys? So, we were college kids. You're like, I don't know, Rebbe. It doesn't sound so good. He's like, yeah, you're right. I don't like it. I'm going to tell him I can't do it. Years later, he went back.
Years later, he went back that up there. But look, I didn't want to get involved. He certainly moved left of center. But what you fellas don't know, the story is quintessential. It captures America and the... He was in St. Louis. And he did great things there, and he organized the first day school in St. Louis. He had, I think, 15 kids. So he could only do it co-ed, otherwise it wouldn't. It's the same like the Rav in Boston in 30, but the Rav was many years before. And the Rav didn't, you know, it was a smaller orthodoxy in America and less right-wing. So Rav Simcha Kraus was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. So we called this, I heard this directly from Simcha, I'm not giving you hearsay or fake news. And he called Rav Kuttner. Rav Kuttner said to him, Yohareg v'al yavar, ad kedei kach. And that was the start of the break with the right wing, with Rav Kuttner. And he organized the day school, the Kavod L'Tiferet. I don't know today whether it's still co-ed or how much it's co-ed, etc., but it's a different world today. But then, and that started the break. And he moved, there's no question he moved into a more leftist position, but he's a big Talmud Chacham and a very fine person. And I'll tell you, if he has sources to back up what the Beitin does, it's fine. I've never really have seen a real tshuva, so I can't judge. But he certainly is a reliable individual. But I know there's conflict today that some of the YURESH Yeshiva don't accept it, etc. But I have no opinion on it because I'm not living in America and I haven't seen the sources black and white. But he was a wonderful, really a warm individual with learning and a sense of humor and a sense of mitlaid. He was a real rabbi in the full sense of the word. And the proof that I'm right is that he could hold very important shtelas even though he spoke with an accent. You follow? And that's the proof. He spoke with an accent. Nowadays, they'll interview a rabbi and say, accent's not for us. Could you imagine a wood meeting of a rabbi speaking? Could be. Today in Woodmere, maybe they've come around that they can appreciate Gottlet and Torah. And he held shtelas for years. He was, first he was in, I forget where he was, the first shtel I was, it may have been upstate New York, I may be wrong. Then he was in St. Louis for many years, and then he was in Hillcrest. Now what's interesting about Hillcrest is that they've lost their rabbis all at once. Rabbi Krauss died now, and the rabbi who succeeded him, Rabbi Dr. Weiss, Richard Weiss, after 16 years, just retired from the rabbinate. He let them know that as of this summer, he's retiring. I think he's coming in Aliyah, if I'm correct. And they're hunting for a rabbi now. So it's interesting what will happen with the young Israel of Hillcrest.
He was the only person who let me, I remember he had Meir Kahana all the time. I mean, he wasn't the Kahanist himself, but, you know, he was very open. And well, I think he always, every year he would come to his shul, and even after he died, they would have yard sites in Hillcrest.
Listen.
Rav Tendler.
Yeah.
Rav Tendler, he spoke at the Levaya. They said that he was one of the few. When did Rav Krauss make Aliyah? Or did he go back and forth? I think I saw him 2 years ago in Riverdale Jewish Center.
No, he...
He made Aliyah in about 05. He went back for a while to be with his kids, and he came back a few years ago.
He came back...
I'm pretty sure I saw him on Sukkot 2 years ago in RJC.
You did. Okay. You did. He went back when they appointed him head of this based in Lamana Gunat. I don't know exactly what it's called, but an international Beit Din. And he was the Av Beit Din, and that's when he went back.
I had a conversation with him in Shul. I was pretty sure it was him. Well, I'm getting 26 degrees here, by the way, with a wind chill of 14.
Yeah, well, I was told 16 degrees. That was earlier, but that was in the middle of... Oh, it's still the middle of the night there. Okay.
When Jay Shapiro came back on Shlichut to Philadelphia, apparently he told the story that when he made Aliyah, the first thing they did was draft him. And he said to the guy, I can't understand. I tried to volunteer for the Korean War in America, and they wouldn't take me. And you're taking me immediately. So the guy, the kid looks at him in the eye and says, you have to understand. Oh, he said, why didn't they take you? He said, because I'm myopic. So the guy looks at him in the eye and says, You have to understand, your enemies are halfway around the world. I was right here.
I hear. Very good, very good. Jay Shapiro, when he was interviewed for the Israel aircraft industry, I believe it was that, or a file, whatever they called it, I think it was Israel. So they asked him, will you be totally loyal to the state of Israel, etc.? And because he's going into a high security position, he said, loyal to the state and the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the guy interviewing him didn't know how to deal with that. They had to call over a frim guy who told them, his answer is correct, don't worry about it. But he threw in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Jay Shapiro, big success story, Kanayin Hara. And his son, wrote again with a lady. They worked together. The lady was the daughter of a girl I knew from Bnei Akiva very well. And Jay's son wrote Srugim. Srugim, the sitcom dealing with the religion, with Katamon. You know what I'm talking about? Srugim. That's Jay Shapiro's son, who is the co-author of that series. The Baruch Hashem, with the people who say they can't make it here, don't know what they're talking about. You know, it's not easy, but you make it, and when you make it, you make it that you forget already, as Jack said, you were raised in Toronto, you love Toronto, you were a proud Canadian, it all disappears. I am in favor, my vote with the Ramban in Parshat Bo, HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, there's no chiyuv to totally uproot your roots. It's not that, even with the ger, there's a whole question, the sentimentality a ger feels. Does he have to feel bad if at Christmas he feels something in his heart, not the religion, not the belief, but that he feels the decoration, the Christmas tree, the carols, Silent Night, Holy Night, the Young Israels, you don't even know this, the Young Israels used to sing at the end of davening Friday night, Christmas time. I don't know, how does it go, Silent Night, who can sing it for me? And just sing, I don't know, it's right to the tune. And everyone laughed, but is it mutar al pi halacha? Think about it. But, all right, if you take it, it's like the tshuva they gave in Germany, are you allowed to sell a cross? And the answer was yes, that the cross is like a Jewish star. It has no religious significance. It just shows...
It's not a crucifix.
It's not a crucifix. The crucifix already is a different story. They asked one time they came into Yeshiva Salanta, and the government, and they're touring, and they say, wow, in Catholic schools, everyone is so quiet and so well-behaved. And here in Yeshiva, everyone is jumping up and talking, yelling, shouting, men weiss, men red, men treit, men tut, men geit, men schreit. And they said, it's very simple. In the Catholic schools, there's a crucifix on the wall. Everyone is frightened stiff. There's Jesus bleeding. In the yeshiva, what do you have in the walls? The kollel, the kotel, so you see an ancient wall, people davening, you're happy, men davened, men are, men shreit, men reint, men... All right, Baruch Hashem, we're doing okay. If there are no other questions, I want to thank everyone for their kind participation. Vic, I told you, I gave Alan... The soul now figure out how Vida Katz fringt Iber de Wasser. Until we meet again tomorrow in health and happiness, thank you for honoring me with your presence. Chaim Maltz, a big muscle tough on the wedding. I was there. It's the first wedding I ever watched on YouTube, I think it was. And I was there. I apologize. I couldn't be there in person, but the age takes its toll. And Sunday, Monday, what I can do is teach, and the rest of the day, rest. R-E-S-T, rest of the day, R-E-S-T, rest. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.